Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Guiding Yourself into Being. My name is Jennifer Belber, and I am a life coach and very happy to be here with you on this Tuesday night. I have a very special guest this evening. Joining me is Kathy Steinberg. Kathy is an LMSW. She is our special guest. She'll be telling us about boundaries, and that's the conversation we're having tonight. When are they appropriate? How do you set them? How do you manage them when they get a little tough and some TLC is required? So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Kathy to the show. How are you tonight, Kathy?
I'm great, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. I want to remind our callers we're live tonight, and you can call in with any comments, questions, or concerns. Our number is 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. Kathy, tell us about yourself. Tell our listeners who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm a social worker. I have a healing and counseling practice. I'm presently in Suffern, but I'm in the process of moving my practice to Nyack, which will be effective right after Memorial Day weekend. I do counseling, individual and family and marital counseling, and I also do healing work. So if someone prefers one or the other or a combination of two, I, you know, practice whatever it is that someone might need. I also am a hypnotherapist, and I do guided imagery and meditation. So I do a lot of work with people who have anxiety and issues, you know, in that area.
And just for our folks listening out there tonight, Suffern and Nyack are both in New York, in Rockland County, New York. So, and Kathy, are you available for over-the-phone counseling as well?
Yes, I'm available for over-the-phone counseling, and I do Skype sessions or FaceTime sessions if someone would like. So I'm available from, you know, a couple different modalities and a couple of different venues.
It's so amazing, isn't it, these days that we counsel and we coach and we heal over Skype, over the phone. It's a fantastic opening up the world and a connection between people that is really special, I find.
Yes, and we've come a long way, baby, in terms of what's available to us, so it's great to be able to use it.
We have. Oh, I love it. I love it. So tonight we are going to talk about boundaries. And one of the things that's very interesting to me, both in terms of conversations I've had with fellow coaches, conversations with friends and with peers, and with coaching clients, is the definition of boundary, personal boundaries, changes. There's a wide variation from person to person. And I find that sometimes that's what blurs the line. So I was wondering, to start out, would you be able to define boundaries and what a healthy boundary looks like for our listeners?
Sure. Well, you know, boundaries are a very personal thing, so they are very different. And, you know, when people are talking about boundaries, they're seen as your limits and your guidelines, the rules that you have, that you maintain as you're operating through your life. And those boundaries, you know, determine how you spend your time, how you spend your energy, where and who is in your life and how much you give. It's even, you know, your money. All of the boundaries that can be physical, mental, emotional, psychological, spiritual, So all of them are parts of how our boundaries are formed, and, you know, really is part of our beliefs, our emotions, our intuitions, and it reflects a lot of our self-esteem. So it is, you know, something that, because you have different people and they have different beliefs and perceptions and experiences, you are going to have different boundaries from one person to another.
You said something very interesting. You said it reflects your self-esteem. Tell me more about that.
Well, you know, our boundaries say a lot about how we think about ourselves. So if you have a poor self-esteem, or you have some of your own personal issues, maybe you're a people pleaser. And so a lot of times people who are people pleasers have trouble saying no. They have trouble saying no to their family, their friends. They don't put appropriate boundaries and they exhaust themselves. And so there's a lot of different, you know, things that have to do with our self-esteem that reflect how stable our boundaries are. I'll give you an example. Family is a big issue with many of our boundaries, because, you know, we bring those boundaries from our childhood. So who you were as a child, and whether or not you were the kid who did too much or too little or whatever it is. And so we get, the family might be asking us for things, or family might tell us, you know, you need to do that. You always were the selfish one. You have to let us come. And so you end up having people come or take advantage of you. Maybe you're the one that always does the holidays, or you loan people money that you know, really don't want to. And it's not just in families. It can be our friends. It can be our, you know, our children. But our self-esteem is the part of us that, the better we feel about ourselves, the stronger we are about speaking our truth and saying, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And not worrying about guilt, not worrying about whether somebody's going to be upset or going to hurt somebody's feelings. And the healthiest people with the healthiest self-esteem have usually the healthier boundaries.
You know, hearing you speak about this, I'm nodding my head in agreement. Yes, that makes perfect sense, perfect sense. But I can't tell you that I ever thought of it in these terms before this conversation just now. Very interesting that, and I think you touched on something that's come up now in not only certain coaching sessions I've done, but in a few of the radio shows that I've done. The expectation and the labeling of us in our family, who the hostess is, who the pleaser is, who the money lender is. It's these labels really seem to follow us, like, you know, the expression, keep turning up like a bad penny. Mm-hmm. And the more we uncover different things and go down so many different roads, tonight it's boundaries. A few nights ago, it was being a mompreneur. It's about our self-esteem. It's about our boundaries. And it's about speaking our truth. So let's jump right in. What would you suggest, or how would you suggest someone who's starting to come into their own truth and starting to step into their power and find their voice, how would you suggest they begin to set healthy boundaries?
Well, I think that, you know, it depends on what phase you are at pondering these things, but I always start with having people visualize the bullseye. And thinking of the bullseye, with the center of the bullseye are the people who are so close to you that there's very little that you don't share with them, that they don't know about you, they are as intimate as can be with you. And then there should be many, many, many rings in this bullseye. And with each ring that you go out, it has a little bit more of a restriction. And I like people to do the exercise of drawing that out and thinking about where somebody is in your bullseye. Because it really does, that's a boundary. If you think of each line of the bullseye as a boundary. And so the person who is in the center may be someone who you will give more to, or you will allow to come in and, you know, be in your home, whereas the neighbor that you just go down the street to and you wave occasionally, you're not going to invite them into your house, perhaps, or you're not going to serve them dinner or loan them money. So it's important to really pay attention to where are these people that I'm dealing with and where do they fall into the bullseye? Because once you start having a little, I'm a very visual person, so when I do things, I always function better when I have a visual. And so I can walk around and say, wait a minute, you know, they are not quite as close as these other people, and it's okay to say no, because they're that far out on the bullseye. And the funny part of it is that sometimes people think they're somewhere else in our bullseye than we really feel they are. And so that's another challenge, is that you have people who think that they're your best friend, and maybe they're, mm-hmm. you know, 10 rings out on your bullseye. And so it becomes very helpful for you to see where people fall, and even to be able to visualize that sometimes you have people that have always been in the center of your bullseye somewhere in the inner circle. And as you grow and change, they move further out. And it's okay for someone to kind of move or shift. That's sometimes how we shed people. As we change, our bullseye changes. So that, you know, that becomes, for me, step one. If you become aware of what is a boundary and where people fall, that's step one. Step two is to be working on your self-esteem and ask yourself, does this work for me? And sometimes, you know, I'll tell you a story. Years ago, I had someone who was a really good friend, but she would ask me for favors. And if I didn't want to do them, instead of saying, no, it doesn't work for me, which is my favorite line, I would make an excuse. And she would find a way around my excuse, even when I didn't want her to. If I said, oh, I have to, you know, take somebody somewhere, she'd call me back and go, okay, well, you can babysit my kids because I found someone else to take them. And I realized I ended up babysitting her children, even though I didn't want to. And so it became clearer for me to, one, use my self-esteem, determine where and what I wanted to do, and create a boundary and say, you know what? I can only watch the kids on a Friday or whatever it is that worked for me, or I can't do it now. And instead of saying no, before I was making excuses, I was peddling. And as my self-esteem got stronger, I was able to put better boundaries in place. So those kinds of things are all boundaries, that you have to not give too much, and you have to decide what it is that works for you.
That's very, very interesting. And I know I am a person who is quite guilty of making up the excuse. Instead of saying, no, I don't think so, or not today, not this week, I very often will say, oh, I'd love to, but I have to do something else. And so that really, it brings up a very interesting point, in that I have been, to use the colloquial, busted doing that quite a few times with some really embarrassing results. So I actually have had to learn to say no. And then I would fall into the trap of saying no and offering an excuse. And it's only in, I would say, the past 3 months that I've been able to say no and just drop it off right there.
Well, a lot of
the
people...
No, go ahead.
A lot of people attach a lot of their own wounding when they hear no. And so when somebody's can be emotional when they hear no, it's, oh, you don't love me, or you this or that. But what I found, I read it years ago in an article, and my children were young at the time, and I was being asked to bake cupcakes for this thing and come work the school fair and, you know, chair this committee. And it was very difficult because you found pressure and, you know, social stigma and all of those things, and wanting to help. And if you said no, you know, oh, well, how can we do this? Or it's your loyalty to the school or whatever it was. And so I read this article, and it said that you should just say, I would really love to help you, but that just doesn't work for me right now. And so what happens is, when you say it doesn't work for me, you don't have to say why it doesn't work for you. And if someone pursues, well, why doesn't that work for you? You could just say, it's just not a good time. Don't give an excuse. It's okay to make the boundary and just say it doesn't work for you. And allow yourself permission to make that boundary, that if something doesn't work for you, you shouldn't do it. And you shouldn't have to why it doesn't work for you. But it's beautiful to say from the start, I would really love to help you, but it really doesn't work for me right now. And so what happens is it softens the emotion that somebody might feel rather than just saying no.
Yes. Say, and you know, it softens things for me. Even as I hear you saying this, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a mantra to practice. It just doesn't work for me right now, because it softens things for me. And in that wanting to be helpful and wanting to be cheerful and wanting, quite frankly, to be involved many times, but noticing now that I'm biting off more than I could chew. This has really been the place in my life where I've had to make my priorities very clear. And the interesting point is, I've had to make them very clear to myself. Almost, I didn't sit and draw a bullseye, but something very, very similar happened for me in the past couple years and with life coach training and now working as a coach. I've had to really adjust my priorities and focus on the people who truly matter, which is not to say that I've cut everybody else loose or lost friendships, but putting things into their proper perspective, that has been the shift. And so I have written down your sage advice, and I am going to remember that. I'm going to remember, it just doesn't work for me right now. And I want to remind our listeners, we're live tonight with Kathy Steinberg. We're talking about boundaries, and our call-in number is 646-716-9397. So please feel free to call in, ask questions. Kathy and I are here to guide you through your boundary issues, the healthy, the sticky, and the in-between. And we'd love to hear your comments and your concerns on this topic. One of the things, Kathy, I wanted to ask you about, because it's near and dear to my heart, and this was where I started to learn to exercise my own boundaries. What are boundaries like for people who are losing weight? And I think as a life coach, I'm helping people who are on a bariatric surgery journey, whether they're pre-op, post-op, whether they're the support person for the person who's had the surgery. One of the things I've noticed in having gone through both pregnancy and traumatic weight loss, what we call traumatic weight loss, is that people seem to think it's okay to comment on both events. And in both cases, there's a very physical outward manifestation, right? So either you're growing yourself a nice big baby bump, or you're losing your physical size. And I've heard everything from real cheerful, positive encouragement, and have thought, oh, I bet that sounded good in your head, but you sure crossed the line, to things that are really invasive. So what can you tell us about setting up the boundary when you're in the middle of that weight loss journey?
Well, I found that when you're going through some big life event, and, you know, it's even similar to people asking you what your salary is, or asking you, you know, how much you paid for your house, or did you have, you know, some kind of procedure to lose all that weight. People are normally curious. They're nosy. They want to know. And often, some people's curiosity is because they're searching for their own answers. And so in the quest, they don't see, you know, like if you're looking to buy a house and someone buys a house that looks really appealing to you, you might say to them, oh, how much did you pay? Not because you're counting their pennies or you're, you know, trying to be invasive, but you might come from a place that says to yourself, oh, maybe I could afford that. And so I know that I've seen a lot of people who are struggling with weight loss. They see someone else lose it, and they feel like they are an investigative reporter and may be asking questions that may cross the line. And it's even if you don't have children, some people will say, you know, don't you like children? Do you have a problem? It's really none of anyone's business. And if you don't feel like you want to speak of it, that's a perfect place to have a boundary. Find your catchphrases, just like the one where, you know, I'd really like to help you, but it doesn't work for me. You can come up with a phrase that pretty much tells someone, that's all you're getting from me and no more. And it kind of shuts them down without being rude. It's one of those things that, you know, the first one or two times it happens, you might be caught off guard and be walking away twisting about it. But once you kind of get your boundary in place, it's really, you know, you think, well, I'm not going to answer that question. And so if I'm not going to answer it, how do I put somebody in a place that can be respectful? You know, that you're not reacting because somebody emotionally crossed a line for you. Because for them, you know, other people are very happy to tell everyone what they make or whether or not they've had surgery or, you know, they can walk around naked in, you know, front of anybody and it doesn't bother them. And yet someone else has a whole different set of boundaries. So set what it is that you're willing to, you know, do or not, and be clear to kind of say, well, I don't discuss that, or, you know, I consider that private. And, you know, it's been a journey. Is a lovely thing for a lot of things that people are going through. Well, it's been quite a journey. And just leave it at that, you know. And somebody says, oh, well, did you have surgery or something else? You can, you know, say I'd prefer not to discuss my medical history or what's going on with me. That's private. And I'll tell
you. That was a lot of good catchphrases there. But I didn't mean to interrupt you, so please go ahead.
No. It's hard when you're on the phone because you can't get someone's visual cues. But yes. I'll tell you something else. And, you know, I know that you and I have discussed this before, and I use this story a lot with people, is that a lot of times when people are struggling, they don't have boundaries as clearly in place as maybe at other times. And so when someone is in a struggle, I equate it to the visual of when you do life-saving, they tell you never swim straight up to someone who's drowning. Because if you do, they will grab you And because they need air, they will push you down and they will drown you. And it's not because they're mean or they wish you any ill will. It's because they are in such crisis that all they can think of is getting air. And in that, they will drown you. They will take your oxygen, in a sense. They'll use your buoyancy to get up and get air. And so they have a way of how you go in and you go from behind and you pull someone in from behind when you're life-saving. Well, it's very much the same thing with people and boundaries in crisis. When someone is in crisis, their needs are so high that they don't think of your needs. They can't, because their needs are so in crisis that all they can think of is getting what they need. So you'll have people who will ask you for things. They will call you incessantly. They will, you know, ask for favors. They may be very inappropriate, clingy, you know, all of those things. And you have to be able to be the one to set the boundaries in place so that they can operate from a place that works for you. So when somebody is having a weight issue and it's really got them in a bad place, they may feel perfectly justified in desperation to ask anyone many personal questions that may feel offensive and intrusive. And you have to think, you know, they're not trying to be mean or intrusive. They may be just desperate. And when you change your view of why somebody's changing your boundaries, it helps you to have more compassion, and it helps you to set your boundary a little easier and firmer, because you realize that they can't help themselves at times.
That is such truth. That was such just a big nugget of truth, because when we change our perspective and we are able to shift our mindset of where we are, and we've all heard it, we can't control what happens to us, but we can control how we react to it. And to me, that's what it sounds like. You're saying shift your perspective and understand where the person who you feel just maybe crossed the boundary is coming from. And I did not know that about the life-saving, but what a great analogy. I never, ever knew that you wouldn't swim straight to a person to come from behind them and grab them, I suppose, from the back. And that is something I find. I'm a very visual person. I will definitely be remembering that and sharing it. So thank you for sharing it with our listeners tonight. That was a great tip. And I think it's very interesting when you talk about people in crisis. Could you just define for our listeners what it means to be in crisis for folks who might not know?
Well, you know, like boundaries, a crisis for one person can be completely different than a crisis for another. But, I mean, when you're in crisis, you really, that's why I love that visual of drowning. It's that you're overwhelmed, you're overwrought, you feel like there's too much either on your shoulders, or there's too much to handle, there's too much information or stimuli, more than what you can handle. So it's really about being overwhelmed. And we can get overwhelmed from physical, emotional, you know, just we can get overwhelmed because of our schedule. There's so many reasons why we get overwhelmed. And that's why people can become desperate and drowning in all those different ways. You can be overwhelmed even just because you're hungry. And, you know, we were talking about toddlers, you and I personally recently, and, you know, you're out with a toddler and they're overwhelmed. They will, you know, go into crisis. And that's one of the things that you just have to be aware, that when someone else is in crisis, whoever they are and whatever their age and whatever their crisis is that they really are, they become very self, you know, it's all about them and their needs and their drowning and gimme, gimme, gimme. And so that becomes a much more important place for you to set firm boundaries. And a classic way of being in crisis is that people who are in the active phase of a mental illness will often have, you know, poor or no boundaries. And so it's very important to really have firm boundaries. And the important part about our boundaries, whether it be disciplining our children or, you know, having neighbors stop by, that if you're not consistent with your boundaries, people will get the message that they're not firmly in place, and they will push a little harder if they think that they're movable. So one of the important things that happens when some people start to set boundaries is they'll set them, but the people around them might not think that they're, you know, maybe they weren't there 3 weeks ago. So people will push you a little harder. And so when I'm working with someone who's trying to set boundaries, they'll say, well, I've been trying to, but, you know, nobody's taking the hint. And that is one of those times where, like discipline with your children, that consistency is the key. Because as soon as you waver off, you set a message, this is not set in stone, and therefore it's a movable barrier. And if there's a movable barrier, someone will try to move it. So it's important to, stay on track and really commit to, if you've set a boundary, really try to hold the line for yourself.
That is such great advice, and it's making me recall not only a conversation you and I had about toddlers, but another friend and I were speaking, and she's been through the toddler stage, and her youngest is now 14. And she reached out to me, and she said, I need some coaching around something. Let me get a reality check. And as we're talking, I realized, you know, when everything was done, she's been, I call her my mommy guru. So she's been my mommy guru as my toddler has started to push the boundaries and throw tantrums. And I said to her, wow, so what you're saying is, if I don't get a handle on the tantrums now, they will repeat and repeat and get larger until we're teenagers, huh? And she said to me, oh, absolutely. And her children had very firm boundaries all along. But even still, you know, I was listening to her and realizing how things could replay. So I think that that's very, very intriguing, that as soon as you set the boundary, people will push against it. I certainly have seen that in my life. I remember I had someone, I set a boundary at one point, kind of early in my weight loss journey, where I wanted to get up early in the morning and go work out. I wanted to get to the gym before work. That was just for a bunch of reasons, going to work better with my schedule. And so I sort of shifted from being a night owl to being a morning person. And it's a painful shift, as anyone who's done it probably knows. And I remember sort of I had someone in my life who would call at like 11 o'clock at night and expect to be on the phone for a few hours after having put her toddlers to bed. And I remember the first time I said to her, listen, I can't do this. I have to go. Oh, okay, but just one thing. And then she would consistently call, and I think I had said, you know, not after 10:30. And what I noticed was she would start to call at 20 past 10. So really, she shifted the phone call up by about 10 minutes or so in front of my boundary. So then I said, not after 10. And sure as anything, she would, you know, ring my phone at 9:45. And this went on for a little while. And finally, I just stopped answering the phone. What I was realizing was that it's one thing to say, this is my boundary. You have to walk the walk behind your talk. And this is just a point I think you need to be very clear when we discuss boundaries, as we are right now. You have to be willing to walk the walk or nothing will change. Because, and I can see where this goes back to a self-esteem issue, you're going to teach people how to treat you, and your boundaries are an extension of that. That's what I'm learning as we go along tonight.
Well, I think that it's also important that so many of us as women are caretakers and givers. You know, we're giving, giving, giving all the time. And we get so in that mode that if someone asks us for something and we can't give it, it often doesn't feel comfortable. So, you know, setting boundaries is a process. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, having some coaching, whether it be with a life coach or a therapist, it helps to get the assistance to walk you through it. And, you know, it's not easy to just place a boundary in place suddenly when you have never done it before and expect them all to work. You really have to think about it, because, I mean, we even have boundaries that are personal boundaries in terms of our personal space. We have boundaries. I can even equate, you know, that some people who don't have very good boundaries in place, it's almost like leaving your front door open all the time. Anybody can walk in. Anybody can take advantage of you. And so you need to have a door. That's the healthy thing. And, you know, and for some people, you need to have a lock and a screen door. And so you have to kind of learn the process of, yes, you know, this person is different than that person. And, you know, even if you have five good friends, you might have different boundaries with those different friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love the visual image of boundaries are like having a door. And some people we need to shut the screen door, and other people we need to slide the deadbolt and, you know, latch the chain. But it's there. And I think that that's a great visual. Great. I'm just a visual person. So all of your visual things, imagine it like this, are really very helpful to me. I have to say that. And I have to thank you for that, because I think that that's a perfect analogy and a perfect visual. And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but we've been on for almost 40 minutes and I've missed some housekeeping. But I just want to remind our listeners that we're sponsored today. Oh, excuse me. So excited. I'm speaking so quickly. We're sponsored tonight by audible.com, and you are entitled to a 30-day free trial if you go to audible.com/lifecoachradionetwork. Audible.com is audiobooks, wide range of subjects, huge range of topics. You can listen on your iPhone, on your iPad, anytime, anywhere. So check them out. And if you're enjoying tonight's show, it is my great pleasure to tell you that the next show on this network will happen on Sunday night at 9 p.m. with Mark My Words, the certified life and business coach, Mark Shaw. And that's a huge boost for me, because Mark was my instructor at IPEC. So my instructor, my mentor, and an incredibly, incredibly talented coach. So check out his show Sunday night at 9 right here on the Life Coach Radio Network. I am live with Kathy Steinberg, and we're talking about boundaries. Please give us a call at 646-716-9397. We're having a lively discussion tonight about boundaries and how it's like keeping your front door open, wide open to not have them, and every stray on the street gets to walk in and take advantage. And for some friends, you need to shut the door, and for some friends, you need to lock the door. But the boundaries, what I'm learning here tonight, and I am learning a lot, this is something I've struggled with at different points in my life. And I struggle in a different way of boundaries. I've gotten much better at setting boundaries for myself, for where people come into. I do notice, though, and I'm wondering, this may be the reverse or the flip side of a boundary issue. I tend to overshare, especially when I am very anxious, which I think would go back to your comment about being in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
When I am anxious about something, I will call whatever friend I consider the expert, quote unquote, and spill my heart out and kind of say, now solve it. So tell me, how does one learn to manage that side of a boundary?
Well, that's, you know, another one of those parts of personal growth where you, hopefully your friends set some boundaries and that you pick up some of the cues where, you know, maybe I'm overstepping, or I've kept them on the phone too long, or whatever that is. The other thing is about having some awareness of when you're in crisis, what is going on with you, that you're overwhelmed, and how to self-soothe, how to have some of your own tools in the toolbox without dumping it on someone else. And, you know, we have this, I have this in therapy sessions a lot, where someone will come in, and we use the expression, it's not a pretty expression, but that people come in and they verbally throw up on you with all of what's going on. And that's quite appropriate when you're in a therapy session and you're overwhelmed and you want to get it all out, that it's, you know, it's very appropriate there. But it's not really appropriate when you're with friends. And, you know, some, again, some of where they are in the bullseye, it may or may not be appropriate. But you have to, it's part of growth, is where you go, you know what, I'm taking advantage of either their time or their good nature. And so you, as you grow and you have more self-awareness and introspection, you might do something, and then later on, just like you're doing, Jennifer, is that you might say, maybe I've overshared. Maybe I've, and as you grow, as you become more self-aware, as you move on your journey, you know, none of us are perfect. And, you know, part of the beauty of this is, you know, I laugh, people come and they'll have therapy and I'll say, I don't have a perfect life. I don't make all the right decisions all the time. You know, this is a process. It's a journey. And you hope that, you know, you have self-awareness, and that you gain more as the journey increases in time, that your knowledge base and your awareness grows. And so for you, Jennifer, it's the same thing as, you know, I think that when someone's really unaware and in crisis, they have no knowledge that they overshared. So the fact that you think that you did is really growth for you. That's self-awareness. So that's great. And as you do it more, you know, and that's why I encourage people, even with the bullseye, the more you pay attention to that, you realize, oh, I just don't pick the phone up and tell everybody, blah, everything. Okay? And the way we learn that often is because we get burnt. You know, you'll tell somebody something and either they don't keep your secret, or they go tell the person that you're talking about or asking about, or they interfere. And so, you know, that's all part of the process of learning. And then you go, oh, wait a minute, they're not really where I thought they were in the bullseye. They're out there, and I'm not going to share that sort of stuff with them anymore.
That's a very interesting point. And another very interesting point you made, it's just assuming that people have time. And one of the things I learned this when I worked in the corporate world for many, many years, I would get very frustrated when colleagues or vendors would call me and they would just launch into something. And I would say, thinking to myself, how do I get this person off the phone? I don't have time to deal with this, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, eventually what happens is you learn their phone number when it pops up on the caller ID, and you learn to let them go to voicemail first so you can assess what they want.
That's about it.
My takeaway from that was, when I was going to be the caller, and I do still try to do this today, even with friends in a social call, say, is this a good time? Hi, is this a good time? Do you have a minute? and sort of give people the opportunity to say, no, I'm in the middle of something right now. Can I call you back? It just comes back more and more, you know, to what Mom told you, be polite.
Absolutely.
And my mother, I'm telling you, if my mom is listening to the show, she is just checking the tick boxes off, nodding her head, saying, uh-huh, I rock, because this is probably the third straight show where I've said, and, you know, it's like Mom always told you, manners count. And so let's talk about that. Let's talk about after I've overshared and thought, maybe that was a lot, send a text and say, hey, sorry if I prattled on. I really appreciate you being there for me. Or a call. Or a card if you're really, really feeling, you know, in that space. Because everybody likes to be acknowledged, too. And I think that is a healthy way to just react and tell people, sorry, I might have overdid it, but thanks for being there. And then don't do it again.
No, but, you know, there's a good friend, someone who's really in that center of the bullseye, wants you to do that. That's what good friends are for. And,
yes.
You know, that for me, with my good friends, and thank God many of my good friends are therapists, so I'm getting it all on all. You know, when you need to sound something out, I think that an important thing that I point out often is that when emotion is up, logic goes down, and it's like a scale. The more your emotion is up, the more your logic goes down. So when you're really emotional about something, it's hard to be logical about it. And so there's certain people that you talk to, either they interject the logic or they also help your emotion go down. So they might talk your emotion down so that you can actually see or feel the logic. And, you know, they may interject some logic for you that your brain is not able to comprehend while you're feeling so emotional about something. So good friends will help you with that. So that's, you know, that's okay. And it's just a matter of, you know, if you're calling, I had a friend at one point, she would be lonely. So she would call me every night in the middle of dinner time. And I had three small kids and a husband who worked nights who was heading out to work. It was not a good time to be keeping somebody company. And no matter how I would say, you know, this is not a good time, she wouldn't want to get off the phone. And that's the same thing. At some point, you try to give somebody a boundary. If they don't, you see their name come up on the caller ID, you stop taking that call. And, you know, you have to form a boundary one way or another.
And you know what? Let's talk about that. I think that that's a perfect segue, because I think that's where folks get tripped up as it gets tougher to, you know, the gently suggested boundary gets overlooked. As it gets tougher to stand firm, or if you need to stand more firmly, what are some strategies for doing that?
Well, I think that a lot of times we have to talk to ourselves first and talk to ourselves why we're having this boundary and making a commitment to ourselves of why we are making a boundary. Because if we really believe in a boundary, it becomes better and easier for us to be able to say it and speak it. That's, you know, our voice, our truth, and energetically, we call it our throat chakra, for us to be able to speak it and feel empowered to voice no, or I can't do that, or, you know, whatever the boundary might be. You know, my time is more important for that. I have telephone solicitors that will call, and, you know, they've learned how to engage you. No matter what excuse you give them, they have a way around it. And so, you know, I respectfully and politely say, thank you very much, but we don't take these calls. Please take us off the list. And then I hang up without listening to another word, because that's it's not negotiable. And I'm not going to sit here and argue with someone who's, you know, reading from a script. And it's the same thing with family or with people in our life. You have to really feel comfortable with why you're saying no or why you're setting this boundary in place. And just stick to it. I know that that there's some friends of mine who have company who will come and stay for weeks at a time, and they don't mind. And in my house, I find it too disruptive. So someone's welcome to stay a night or two, but you know, there's a limit. And so if someone's coming in, I can say to them, you know, my house is just not conducive to having long-term company. You're welcome to stay a night or two. And that's very clear. You're very clear about what it is and why. And, you know, and then that you put the problem back into their lap. So if you solve that dilemma, and then they'll find someplace else to stay.
Good advice. Good advice. I, of course, say I host a dinner and a show. I'm like dinner theater. I tell folks it's dinner and a show. I don't do a bed and breakfast because I simply, you know, our home is just too small and overnight company really doesn't work for me. So I think sometimes I tend to fall back on the humor in setting up a boundary. I know I do this in pretty much every aspect of my life. If I can make a joke, we're good. We're good. So
but some people don't see jokes as being serious. So, you know, I have watched people just ignore the joke and, you know, bring their suitcase anyway. So sometimes it becomes important. And some people really, you know, if they have different thoughts or beliefs than we do, then they, you know, they don't think it's a big deal not to listen to that because they don't care about whatever it is that you're setting a boundary. And I just wanted to tell a quick story to you because I know
we're
probably running out of time. One of my good friends that when my children were little, we spent a lot of time together. And I really admired and respected how efficient she was, how much she could get accomplished, and how things went pretty smoothly for her. And I noticed how she did things, and she would invite us over and say, you know, Thursday, I'd love to have you for lunch, but I just want you to know I have this, that, or the other thing going on, so I'm kicking you out at 2 o'clock. So if you can come at noon, I'd love to have you, but you have to be gone by 2 o'clock. And she would tell us that at the invite. So you knew right off the bat that at 1:45, as she's packing things up, It was a boundary that was set before you got there. And if you have company that comes consistently, and I think we've all had them, and they don't know when to go home, then it's important when you invite those kinds of people, you say, we have to go to bed early, so, you know, I'd love to have you, but we have to close up ship at 10 o'clock. And so, or, you know, we're on a budget, and we'd love to have you for dinner, but you have to bring a course. There is ways to set the boundary before. And, you know, it's important to think about those things rather than not use your voice and then be suffering in silence because somebody is now pushing your boundaries.
That's a very interesting perspective, setting the end time for the party when you send out the invitation. It reminds me of, I don't know if you or our listeners have watched The Barefoot Contessa on TV, Ina Garten. She talks very frequently about entertaining and made a comment that sometimes her favorite type of party to throw is a cocktail party. She said, and you put right on the invitation, cocktails from 6 to 8, and you're done, your feet are up, and you're in your slippers by 8:30. It's the perfect night. And I remember hearing her say that and thinking, yes, that is the perfect night. I'm in bed early, which for me is a priority because I'd like to, I need to be up by 5 to get a workout in and then get some work done before my child gets up, right? Because that's my window of time. I have about a 2.5 to 3 hour window of time if I am up and out of bed by 5 p.m. So that's something where I know I have set a boundary over my social life and bedtime and certain things like that. One thing, though, I do want to touch on, and we have just 4 minutes and 45 seconds left. This hour has flown by. One of the things I do want to touch on, though, is sometimes, and I am guilty of this, I will be very nervous about setting the boundary with someone because I just don't want to hurt their feelings. Or, for instance, it's a family member. It's mom. Well, no, that's not true because my mother, I would just let fly and she would deal with it. But maybe, you know, sometimes when it's our in-laws and we're new to that family and not sure how things work, or you know, I'm really fortunate I have terrific in-laws, but I know that for other people, there's some friction there because the family you came from doesn't always work the same way as the family you marry into. Any advice for folks who need to set boundaries with family members?
I think that, you know, if you can take your hat in hand a little, I find that rather than being in the offense, because sometimes, you know, our in-laws or people can do things that really trigger us. And so you almost feel like you have to defend yourself or defend your home. And so instead of taking that, just, and you, like you said, you might do it with jokes or humor, but even to be able to say, you know what, I really don't do well in this situation, so could we do it this way? And so there is a softer way of, you know, putting something together without necessarily being on an offense. To make a boundary doesn't mean that you have to be aggressive or you have to be mean, but you can be firm in it, okay? Firmness does not mean that you have to be mean or aggressive. So you can just say, you know, sweetly, like, I'm sorry if this is inconvenient for you. Or you can, you know, that even that I'd really love to help you, but it doesn't work for me. You know, I'd really love to stay later. I'd really love to come, but my baby has to be in bed by 6 o'clock. Whatever it is, then you just set that boundary and try to hold it. And just, it doesn't have to be a negative thing. And if somebody's trying to push, you know, you just kind of have to say, same thing, sorry, but it makes me uncomfortable to do that. Makes me uncomfortable. Well, many people have in-laws who come by and they don't call, or they drop in. You know, we're just in the neighborhood, or things like that. And so you have to find ways that are most pleasant. And, you know, I've had some people when I've tried to tell them and they wouldn't take no for an answer, or they kept stopping by without an invitation because they knew I'd be in the yard anyway. I can't tell you how many times I threw my pocketbook over my shoulder and put the kids in the car and drove down the block only to come back to say, gee, I wish you had called first. We were just heading out the door. And so, you know, and my kids would be like, Mom, where are we going? But we would drive around because that was a boundary. No matter how many times you say it's not good or you're there with other people, you know, I wish you had called, or you find a way to try to soften it a little bit.
And I think, let's do this again, but next time give me a call first. So I know you're coming. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, Kathy, that is great advice, and I want to thank you so much for being here with us tonight. We just got the 60-second warning, folks. That means our hour is nearly up. And I want to thank you for being here again. My guest tonight was Kathy Steinberg. Kathy is a social worker in Suffern, New York right now, soon to be Nyack, New York. And her web address is wehealtogether.com. That is wehealtogether.com. And I will put a link to her website on my website, which is Jennifer Belburn. I am a life coach helping folks who are anywhere on their bariatric surgery journey. Kathy, thank you so much for being here tonight. It was a great conversation. I do hope you'll join us again.
Thanks so much. I'd love to.
Great. Have a great night. Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.
Good night.